Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view. The people who work in the prison system would have another. And I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time Show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. And a warning that this episode of Doin' Time contains audio images of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died and graphic discussion of deaths in custody. This is Marissa and I'll be with you for the next hour. First up on the show, we will be hearing an interview from a very special guest, Maria Mitchell, who is a proud Yorta Yorta woman, and she is from the Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service. And Marie is a director of community justice programs, and we will discuss deaths in custody and also talk about truth-telling, particularly in the context of over-policing and Aboriginal deaths in custody. I'm hoping also to speak to her about the child protection system and some of the recommendations that the government has made in regards to, the Urich Commission has made to the government. So there's a lot of stuff going on with the government and a lot of over-policing, which has affected Aboriginal people and has an adverse impact in colonisation and genocide. After that, we will speak to Brett Collins. And Brett is going to come and give us an update on what's happening with Justice Action. Brett Collins has lived experience of prison, and we will talk a little bit about that. But first, I will introduce and welcome Marie. Hello, Marie. Welcome to the program.
Oh, good afternoon, Marissa. Thank you so much for having me.
Lovely to have you. Now, Marie, could you just tell us, first of all, what land you're from?
Absolutely. I have a Yorta Yorta Nations background. However, I'm joining today from the lands of the Wurundjeri people.
Fantastic. And could you just tell us a little bit about what you've done over the years?
Sure. For the last 52 years, Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service, or I think better known as VALS, we provide high-quality, culturally safe legal service to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people all across Victoria. So VALS is a very proud ACCO, or Aboriginal Community Controlled Organisation, established in 1973 in the heart of Fitzroy. I understand not too far from 3CR Studios. Currently we have dedicated legal practices for civil and human rights, criminal law, Aboriginal families, which includes child protection and family law support, young people and police and prison accountability, so that's our Wirraway practice. And these are strengthened by our 24-hour custody notification service, or our CNS. And we also have our CSOs, which is our client service officers, that are based all across Victoria in our regional hubs as well as in our metro offices. Supporting our legal teams with clients, for clients with their non-legal needs. Alongside that, we've got our community justice programs, which I oversee. So we've got our custody notification service, which is when our mob are in Victoria Police custody. We've got our Bagarup program, which is the transitional housing program for Aboriginal women leaving custody. We've got the Aboriginal Community Justice Reports that currently sit for mobs who are in front of the county court all across Victoria. In more recent years, we've seen the establishment of our dedicated youth legal practice, Bulletin Aloo, and our Wirraway Police and Prison Accountability Practice, which has supported families who have lost loved ones in several high-profile coronial inquests, alongside the strengthening of bail advocacy. So we're not just a legal service. We do provide localised support and referrals to other community-led services and mainstream agencies. We've always been strong in promoting the rights of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, as well as empowerment, identity and culture.
Marie, that's so fantastic that you've been able to give a really great overview of the Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service. So prior to working with VELS, you worked in the community sector, didn't you, for nearly 15 years across Aboriginal community-controlled organisations?
That's correct, yeah.
Fantastic. And you've also done a Bachelor of Social Work as well?
Yep, so I've got a Bachelor of Social Work. I can't remember if it's a Bachelor of Human Services, Master of Social Work. I get it confused from La Trobe in about 2012.
Oh, yeah, in your bio, it actually says Bachelor and Master's in Social Work.
Oh, well, there you go.
Fantastic.
And then I've got a grad dip in Family Therapy First Nations by the Bouverie Centre as well. So
that's great.
A couple of pieces of paper in the cupboard. But I think most proud of my work that I get to do in the ACLO sector.
So let's unpack some stuff. And I just wanted to give listeners another content warning that there's going to be quite a lot of discussion about Aboriginal deaths in custody.
Mm-hmm.
What is going on, Marie, do you think, in regards to the fact that there have been so many Aboriginal deaths in custody? It has ballooned, hasn't it, since the Royal Commission was established, so the recommendations haven't been implemented?
Absolutely. I think certainly via our CJP or Community Justice Programs, I have the privilege to be able to go, you know, into the prisons and yarn with mob in custody. And I think, you know, we know that the changes to the bail laws in Victoria are having devastating effects on the mental health of our community members in custody. They are at pains when I go in to speak about what is going on behind the scenes, and certainly VELS is trying to do a lot of advocacy relating to the experiences of mob in custody at the moment. Certainly VELS very strongly says every death in custody is a tragedy. The families and communities that are left behind mourning their loved ones passing carry the heavy and emotional burden as they seek justice. In my role at VELS, and certainly VELS broadly, we extend our deep and sincere sympathies to the families who are mourning the unimaginable loss of their loved ones, yet again preventable at the hands of an oppressive and very, very discriminatory system. There have been at least 598 Aboriginal deaths in custody since the Royal Commission handed down its report in 1991, so now 34 years ago. However, shamefully, we are continuing to see the same ill-informed and harmful policy decisions that have been repeated for generations. Governments across this country are not listening to Aboriginal communities. If racist police policies and locking people up in prisons equated to community safety, surely we would all be safe by now. These are the same practices that have been employed since invasion. 230-plus years of over-policing and no accountability. What we see at VELS is very clear that the current government approaches to implementing regressive laws, cutting funding to supports and services that actually make a difference, will have a very predictable and horrifying outcome. The numbers of Aboriginal deaths in custody will only increase. when Aboriginal-led organisations are in control, we achieve better outcomes for the future of our young generations. We all want the same thing. We want to remain with our families. We want our children to be safe and unharmed. This can be achieved when we work together on these outcomes. Now is the time for action, and action takes funding and resources. I will just quickly add, I think certainly at my time at Vels, I've only been here for 18 or so months. We know about the Aboriginal deaths in custody, but we only hear little bits and pieces about the near misses in prison and Victoria Police custody. So I think there are some statistics that also need to be recorded and need to have the light shone on as well.
Tell us more about that.
I think, so certainly at Vels, we've seen post the bail laws immediately before they even came into action, we saw very risk-adverse magistrate decisions in the magistrates' court. We saw a significant increase in over-policing. We've got a 300% increase in youth in police custody since these bail laws were announced. So happy to go more into that, but
it's true.
I've recently met with the head of our Wirraway, so that's our police and prison accountability team, on the sheer numbers of referrals coming from our custody notification service. So that's our 24-hour, 7-day-a-week program that Vels runs for mob in police custody. We're seeing a significant increase of Aboriginal people being harmed through the arrest process, and then that they're not being medically supported whilst in police custody. So these referrals are going through to our Wirraway team, and these referrals have absolutely gone through the roof in the last few months.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, to be honest, Marie, and one of the things that really stands out for me as a radio broadcaster and doing human rights activism is the inquests. It's so important for listeners to attend the inquests of First Nations people who have died. And one inquest that stands out for me is Veronica Baxter and what happened to her.
Veronica Nelson?
Veronica Baxter. Pockham's Law.
Oh, yeah. So she, that was some very heavy advocacy work that Vels did in Victoria. Unfortunately, the current government, so Premier Allan, has rescinded on Pockham's Law, and we're now seeing we're seeing bail laws that are incredibly racist towards
Veronica,
our mob.
Oh, excuse me, sorry, Veronica Nelson.
Yes.
Veronica Nelson. So sorry about that, Marie, and listeners. Okay. Go on, yep.
From the bail laws in Victoria, we're seeing mass incarceration of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people at an absolute crisis point. I mentioned earlier that I do have the honour and privilege of yarning with mob in custody, and every time I go in, it's why am I on remand? Why am I not getting bail? What is going on in the outside that I'm not getting bail? I'm yarning with women at VPSD who are bereft at the changes of bail, and they say, but we were here when Veronica passed or Pockham passed. Does her death mean nothing? You know, they're crying and they're so upset, and I just can't understand. It's so difficult to be yarning with mob inside, and particularly when I'm yarning with the women who were present at VPSD when Pockham passed, and when we're now sort of trying to go through some really conservative bail reform again.
Absolutely, absolutely. Marie, thank you for talking about the deaths in custody. It's so important, isn't it? And we need to really make sure that deaths in custody are prevented, and we need to build the movement to stop Aboriginal deaths in custody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's fair to say that the prison system, even before these bail changes were announced, is not coping. Right now, prisons are not safe for anyone. Prisons are not places of rehabilitation. Broken systems cannot heal trauma.
Absolutely. And just for the benefit of listeners, and I won't talk too much about this because this death in custody happened in New South Wales, but I beg your pardon, I actually also wanted to mention Veronica Baxter because she also did die in custody. A prison guard opened the door to Veronica's cell at 6 o'clock in the morning. This was quite some years ago now in March, to find her dead, hanging from a noose made from a bed sheet. Yeah. And of course, Veronica Nelson also died in custody in Victoria as well. Just so that listeners find out where my correction has come from.
No, that's fine. It was a good pickup, so thanks for that.
Okay, Marie, so let's move on now to truth-telling and the Europe Commission.
Yeah.
Can you comment on that, and particularly in the context of VALS?
Absolutely. So we've witnessed something truly historic and powerful for First Peoples here in Victoria, the culmination of Australia's first truth-telling process, so the Europe Justice Commission. Over 4 years, the Commission bared witness and listened to hundreds of submissions and evidence through hearings all across the state on country where people felt safe and supported to share their lived experiences. Truth-telling is fundamental when it comes to entering any form of treaty for First Peoples. How can we move forward to a self-determined Aboriginal-led future without recognising the truths of our history since colonisers first invaded our land and the historical and ongoing injustices our people experience? Right now, we're in a very unique position negotiating Australia's first statewide treaty, which will form the framework for more to come.
What does treaty mean to you, Marie? As a Yorta Yorta woman.
Honestly, I feel like we are kind of on a cliff edge. And I say that with absolute positivity. Like, I feel like, for me, I look at the horizon as that's just the beginning of where we're headed. I've got family members that are on treaty. Our CEO, Narita Waite, is on treaty. And it's just something that I feel so proud to be a part of and kind of be in this time, because we're literally making history in 2025, you know, our grandchildren and, you know, our kids will grow up and say, "Mom or Auntie, can you tell us, you know, what was it about in the same way that we look to our elders and ask, talk to us about the referendum that happened, you know, what was it like?" And I feel like this is kind of one of those pivotal moments in history that we are getting to live through. So it's something incredibly exciting.
It is exciting, and yet a lot of First Nations people, even though they hope for treaty, they feel disillusioned.
Yeah, look, absolutely. I think, you know, as a community, we're not homogenous, and everyone will have their own feelings and thoughts around treaty, and what treaty will mean something very different for a lot of different people. And it's fair to say we've got mob that are not for treaties. You know, they don't believe in it, and they're not in agreement to it. And I completely and would always respect that. But for me, I'm really excited for what treaty could mean for us in Victoria. I think often in Victoria we're quite proud to sort of be one of the states that's viewed as quite progressive. So I really hope that the treaty process, you know, continues to push us forward in terms of self-determination in Victoria.
Marie, you've brought something wonderful to the Do and Time show, because you've shared with us some of your story. And at the Doin' Time show, we provide a safe environment for First Nations people and First Nations content. At the same time, also incorporating media about for women in prison who have been deprived of a voice. And and I'm wondering if you could go a little bit of a step further here and talk a little bit about your story. For example, are you Stolen Generation?
I'm not, but my father is.
Yep.
I grew up completely in out-of-home care as a child. So from 0 to 18, I lived in the out-of-home care system with the oversight of child protection. Significant traumas, you know, as a lot of our community members do have from child protection and child protection system. I'm a absolute kind of product of child protection practices of the 80s, so there's a hint to my age.
Oh, my goodness.
And they're horrific. Like I, you know, said to someone just the other day, I still, you know, still up until a couple of years ago have nightmares about experiences and, you know, police being at, you know, some of my removals, some of the properties that, you know, I lived in and carers that I had. You know, I have one story, you know, your book heard thousands of stories just like mine, and even worse, you know. I was lucky never to enter into the residential care system, only stayed in foster care. So, you know, even though I've had some horrific examples, I'm still grateful that some of my time could have been worse, you know?
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's fair to say a lot of our community have trauma from different government agencies. And my work previously in other ACOs and other government settings, I've tried to work, you know, against or within the child protection system to make it culturally safe or change practices. And I think one day I stood up and I just said, no more. I cannot come to work every day and be triggered or re-traumatised when I'm working against a government system that will not change. So with that, I moved to Valve. Very proud to stand behind Narita in terms of her staunch advocacy in the justice space, and I really hope that the work that I get to do at Valve at least changes some of these government institutions for our mob moving forward.
You will, because you have lived experience and you're very passionate about the work that you do. Mm. Also, I'm wondering if you could comment on the Indigenous Truth-Telling Commission recommending creating a standalone First Nations child protection system.
I can a little bit. I know that in Victoria we've got NUGL or Section 18 that is aimed at being, you know, a community-led response to child protection. However, Val's broadly we're advocating for just a complete change to the child protection system. Not, you know, just essentially restarting again. We see the child protection system as very inherently broken, creating and inflicting further trauma on Aboriginal children and their families. And so Valve, we say, surely there's a better way. Surely community can come up with something stronger and more culturally led, rather than within the same confines that the child protection system already runs.
And we certainly can't forget Victoria Police, can we? And Victoria Police have manipulated data to manufacture fear about crime. And the government certainly hasn't raised the age yet, has it?
No. So another piece that Vals is staunchly working on is raising the age to 14. I believe the state is looking at raising the age to 12. I think simply if you look to, you know, there's a huge body of work that we know that teenage brains just aren't equipped to make a lot of the decisions they do, you know, at 12 years old. If you add in trauma, complex trauma, PTSD, any sorts of disabilities that a lot of our children unfortunately have, again, often because of the child protection or welfare system, they're already behind the eight ball, you know, in terms of negotiating Victoria Police.
Yeah, and I think Victoria Police actually issued an apology, didn't it, during the Europe Commission?
They did. Just,
well, I would have loved to have seen that.
After, I think, it took some time for them to, you know, front the Europe commissioners at the Commission. But, yes, you're correct. They did issue an apology in that space. Unfortunately, you know, I started our interview off with a harrowing statistic that, you know, in the last couple of months since these bail reforms were announced, we're seeing 300% increase in young people in police custody.
And we need to change that, and I'm hoping that there is more funding allocated to VALS to get all that happening and to get early intervention supports happening.
Absolutely. VALS is really keen to move into and strengthen our early intervention and prevention space. However, unfortunately, the budget that was released earlier this year has not meant that we're able to grow in that space. And unless we can secure further funding, VALS is in a very grim position to be able to meet community needs, particularly with the changes to bail.
Marie, thank you so much for coming onto the program. Are there any final comments that you wanted to make before we finish?
I think more broadly, we need our community members and we need our allies to stand alongside us. We are desperately seeking further funding to be able to expand our programs. We are a really proud Aboriginal legal service in Victoria, and we every single person that works here is really passionate in terms of supporting mob. But we need more support. We need more funding. We need our programs, you know, to be able to expand to meet the needs of our community. So we're not seeing young people, you know, sitting in police cells for up to 3 weeks. So we can get more women, you know, men and women transitioning out of custody to reintegrate with their families and children. We have so much more work to do. We really need the Victorian government and the federal government to come and put their money where their mouth is in terms of supporting the Aboriginal community here in Victoria.
Let's hope so. And let's hope it's not going to be 1788 all over again.
I appreciate that sentiment. Thank you so much, Marissa.
Marie, thanks a lot. And listen back to the podcast. It should be available soon. And I'm hope we talk to you again very soon. Thanks a lot.
No worries. Thank
Take
you.
Care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Marie Mitchell, proud Yorta Yorta woman from the Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service and Director of Community Justice Programs. And prior to working with VALS, Marie has worked in the community sector for nearly 15 years across Aboriginal community-controlled organisations and within Court Services Victoria, primarily in the Family Division of the Children's Court, working to support the growth of the Maringajala Koori Family Hearing Day.
3CR Radiothon 2025. Your station, your voice.
Do a bit of disrupting and cause a bit of ruckus in the colony.
Always was, always will be.
not celebrate Australia, but instead pay homage to the resistance of First Nations people against this illegal colonial occupation.
3CR, your station, your voice.
This country's black future is a fire. With the right season, that burning school fire.
And you're back with the Doin' Time show, in case people have just tuned in. And before we actually get on to Brett Collins from Justice Action, I just wanted to just thank everybody for donating to the Doin' Time show. And it is the last day of the financial year. So, and I think the last day of Radiothon as well. But it's not too late to donate. Please donate to all shows at 3CR and to the Doin' Time show. But now I'd like to welcome Brett Collins to the program. And he's from Justice Action. And I wanted to speak to Brett and because he wants to, I would like him to give an update about what's going on with Justice Action, the work of Justice Action, that is. Hello, Brett. Welcome.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Marissa. Yes. Lovely to speak with you.
You too. Hey. So, Brett, you came on, I think, a couple of weeks ago to talk about youth justice and computers in cells. But I think there are a couple of new things happening, isn't it?
Well, that's right. Look, to be honest, a whole lot of quite regressive things are happening in the youth justice system. And I did actually miss the last comments from your previous speaker, but I'm sure that she would have drawn attention to the fact that putting more cells in there for kids in Victoria and Queensland. So there's
definitely
been a bit of a move. Yes, that's right. Shocking stuff, actually. And when you realise that there's some interesting statistics about how if you just put $1 into youth work and ensuring that the services outside in the community, it saves $2.6 for the cost to the taxpayer. So that sort of stuff, you know, just as a rational approach, it means that it's just outrageous to put people more into prisons and to hold them, lock them up. You know, there's all the statistics that show that if you hold two people, one person arrested for the same offence as another, if you put the one person into youth justice, even on remand, that they have ended up with a much worse outcome than the person who's actually left in the community with some support in the community. So, you know, it's just outrageous that they continue to behave the way they have in the past and even making it worse.
Very outrageous. So tell us about what's been going on. I believe you're going to be going overseas.
Well, that's right. Look, we've got heaps of stuff we're doing internationally, actually. We're trying to not to lose our focus on domestic work, because that's really where the action always is. It's close at home. It's you know, it's our state, or it's where, you know, it's the neighbourhood. I think it's really important to stay close to what's happening around you. But then we've got also the wider opportunity to take things like, for example, the success we had getting computers into cells in every New South Wales prisoner, and that was a world first, to get access to phones and cells and access to certain whitelisted websites. And so that was we're running that out as widely as we can. So we went to Kenya to the ACUA conference, and we ended up with the Nairobi Declaration for detainee telecommunication rights, which is quite an important statement, actually. And now we're preparing for the statement in 2026 into Abu Dhabi. There's a World Crime Congress there, so we're just doing preparation to make sure that we get support, and there we can get also draw upon our friends who are around the world, nice networks of people. Some of them even criminologists and, you know, politicians. A lot of professors who are part of quite an important network where we can carry some of those ideas that have begun in the cells. They are carried now out into international networks, and they do make the difference. They make an enormous amount of difference. We found to what people think, what are impacts on them out into the wider conversation. So at the moment we're preparing for a Mexico trip, and we're just doing some preparations, making sure we know What are the conditions in Mexico? What are the reasons for crime? Who should we be talking to? And doing some sort of a public a gathering of a speech of an opportunity to speak to like-minded individuals and to push out what our experiences with the Nairobi Declaration and also link into their activists and make sure that we draw them into the work we're currently doing and hear from them about what they think is important.
Really important, that, isn't it, Brett? The other thing is too, excuse me, I've been speaking all day. It's been a really, really long day, Brett. The other thing is, can you comment on the mental health? We were speaking off air this afternoon about mental health, and what's Justice Action's position on mental health facilities?
Right. Look, we're really concerned about what's happening in the issue about mental health generally, because there's a very great temptation for the managers to declare some of the people who are most troublesome in the prisons, declare them as being mentally ill, inverted commas, and even to lighten sentences and make excuses for people because they haven't got control of their actions. But that really is the slippery slope to having them on medication and requiring them to be on medication, monitoring them, and if you misbehave, then you've found yourself labelled as somebody who has some mental health issue. And that's a really dangerous thing. It certainly wasn't the case some decades ago, but increasingly it's coming into the space of prisons, and we're fighting hard against that being part of the conversation. So the medication itself is just removes people's entitlement to, even sometimes, do things that are wrong, or even be angry and everybody else, be angry and sometimes even break the law, but then be punished for what they've done and then get back into the community, on their feet instead of sitting in the corner medicated and into submission. So we're running a hard defence on that right across Australia. But in through youth justice, for example, youth justice is a very significant area where they very much like to label kids as ADHD and mentally ill. We're making sure that that the laws which prevent forced medication that they actually hold strong, and the entitlement to have a person to be even do something bad. Think, okay, well, I won't do that again. I'll see what effect it has, or learn something new, find some new things of interest to me. All those things have always been options in the past. But to have the medical profession declare someone as being mentally ill and then medicate them into submission is an outrage. It's a human rights issue.
It is an absolute outrage, isn't it? So having computers in cells, to do holistic counselling with people in prison, do you think that can be extended to the mental health facilities as well?
Oh, look, absolutely. Well, see, look, even if it doesn't directly go to the mental health facilities, but it should do, of course. We are having a conversation tomorrow with the Australian Human Rights Commission about the entitlement of people who are inside the psych institutions or inside youth justice or inside the prisons, access to independent counselling from outside. So that's a really significant area, and people can just themselves look at what they've done, look at what the trauma they've been through or the problems they've had, and examine that without even having to have a counsellor. So having access to information to read it confidentially, to start to look at yourself and see what might make a difference, and also then to put your energy and time into something positive as well, instead of sitting in a cell vegetating and drugging up to make life a bit more livable. To have a chance to have education, or even to look at what you did do. And find a way of dealing with it. Now, all those things are just obvious. And if you're out in the general community, you think that of course, you have a right to do it. It's all up there on the internet. But if you're inside a cell, in a prison system or in a psych system, then that right is denied you, which is totally, it's definitely the opposite of what should be intended. It should be, they should offer to have you access to give you trust to access to trusted organisations outside. He'll be out there for you when you come out and give you some new ideas and maybe give you a chance to learn art, or music and find something that you really enjoy.
Exactly. You were speaking just before about youth justice, and, you know, one of the things that I've really talked to quite a lot over the years, Brett, in particular this year, 2025, is about people in prison, adult prison, but also youth, having access to external counselling without conflict of interest. Can you talk about that?
Oh, look, absolutely. Look, that's really the basis on which we won the campaign here in New South Wales. Like what we were able to do, we spoke in behind two global figures, Elizabeth Evatt, AEC, the top accolade and award in Australia, former first Chief Justice of Family Court of Australia and in the United Nations Human Rights Council, and John Dowd, AOKC. We and behind them, we were able to push a very strong campaign to point out that unless people in prison had access to counselling, which they could trust, they had no counselling at all. If they were just left to having prisoner or prison authorities, counsellors who were reporting to the authorities, then who's going to trust them? So effectively, all the counsellors, all the psychologists are employed by corrections are of no use at all if it comes to changing people's behaviour. So they're only there to assess people and to make judgments, and every prisoner knows that. So they're not going to talk truth. They're not going to expose themselves. And of course, that conflict of interest between having a position of authority on committees and expecting trust, it doesn't work. So you're having an external supplier, an external counsellor, like Aboriginal Medical Service, for example, or it could be a Sudanese counsellor. It wouldn't matter where what community it comes from, to have an external counsellor who knows you, ideally even knows you before you went to jail, and to have access to that person in your cell where you can actually talk to them confidentially and then have a trust in an effective counselling, which then when the person's released is actually available for them, existing for them when they're waiting to get out, and also paid for by federal government quite often, or state government already existing there, and then just feeling emotionally connected to the outside whilst you're still in your cell. So all those things are compelling arguments, and so that was the basis upon which we run the computers and cells in New South Wales, and we're running hard now with those ideas right across Australia, and especially into youth justice and to other areas as well.
Brett, thank you so much for coming onto the program. It's lovely having you. Are there any final comments that you wanted to make?
Okay. Well, look. We're just about to put a newsletter actually out to our contacts in the prisons. That includes all the people in Victoria. So anyone who's been in contact with us, we'll be sending them a letter. In fact, if anyone wants to send a letter to us, we're very, very pleased to receive it. Maybe I can give. Can I give the address for
Justice
Action?
Please. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. All right, so if they just address it to Justice Action, P.O. Box 386, Broadway, New South Wales 2007. So it's P.O. Box 386, Broadway, New South Wales 2007, and we respond to every letter, and so we're just about to send a personal letter to all our contacts around Australia, so a few hundred people around Australia inside both prisons and locked hospitals. And so the more context we have, the better it is. We can then draw upon people's information and their experience, and makes us stronger, and we give them more support.
So does this newsletter go out to prisons or to the community or both?
Well, no, only into people who are actually in custody, in detention, wherever they are. So we're not using the word. I use the term newsletter. It's like a newsletter. But it's addressed to each person separately. So it's Joe Blow, Jenny Blow, each person separately as a letter. So that way it can't be stopped by authorities, and because it's the entitlement of people to communicate, and so that'll be going out very shortly.
I'll reach out to some contacts I have, and we'll certainly send you some information about some emails about that, Brett. But in the meantime, yes. Can you just give out the address again?
Yes, sir. So it's PO Box 386, Broadway, New South Wales 2007.
And that's for any people in prison.
Yes, that's right. Yep, and the psych hospitals as well. And it's all unfortunately, it's becoming really almost like one institution. We regard people who are in detention, wherever they are, as being our community, and we'll do our best to work with them.
Thank you so much, Brett. It's been great having you.
Lovely, lovely to speak with you again, Rosa. Thank you for the opportunity.
Take care.
Thank you,
you
too.
Bye-bye. Tune in.
The Melbourne Documentary Film Festival returns to Cinema Nova this July for Past, Present, Future. Beginning on July 15, warm up the cold winter days with a revitalising collection of local and international documentaries from independent and emerging talents. Melbourne Documentary Film Festival, a jewel in Melbourne's cultural crown. Screening from July the 15th for a limited time at Cinema Nova, 380 Lygon Street, Carlton. Cinema Nova is a 3CR supporter.
Tune in to the Beyond.
Public transport's great.
What's not great is that unless you've got a radio with you, you can't listen to 3CR when you're on it.
Until now. The Community Radio Plus app lets you listen to us wherever you are.
Get on board and search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
Oh.
still here today to carry on our culture in the modern Geneva business way. Oh, Mother's Day. Oh, Mother's Day. Oh, Mother's Day.
Comrades, friends, siblings all over this continent, I urge every one of you to join us in Canberra. I refuse to be silent while Gaza is being annihilated. History will judge us all. No one will be able to say they didn't know, that they didn't see, that they didn't hear. The screams and pain are reaching every one of us from the screens we hold in our hands. Now is the time to act. July 20. I urge, I beg each and every one of you, each person of good conscience, to stand with us in Canberra. Together we can send this simple, clear message. The Albanese government must sanction Israel now. When governments fail, responsibility falls upon the citizenry to act. If we don't stand up now, then when? Join us in Canberra, July 20. It's time for the Albanese government to sanction Israel.
People tasted freedom, soon those hellish skies turn to blue and starry nights. As our voices start to rise, we're ending an apartheid.
Tune in to the Beyond the Bars Prison broadcast during NAIDOC Week 2025. Listen to 3CR each weekday at 11 a.m. from Monday the 7th through to Friday the 11th of July. We'll be taking you inside six Victorian prisons: Dame Philip Frost Centre, Barwon Prison, Fulham Correctional Centre, Middleton Prison, Marguerite Correctional Centre and Port Phillip Prison. We'll be connecting with culture and community. There'll be stories, songs, opinions and poems from the men and women inside. The shows will be live on 3CR 855 on your AM dial, 3CR digital and streaming via our website or on the Community Radio Plus app. Head to the website 3cr.org.au/beyondthebars2025 for more information.
The city of Maribyrnong's population is growing. Council is asking for your feedback to help shape the future of housing in our city. Learn more, read our discussion paper, and share your thoughts by 20th of July at www.yourcityyourvoice.com.au/housing. A 3CR supporter.
And it's approximately 4:53 and we're nearing the end of the Do and Time show. And this is Marissa, and just wanted to thank our guests for coming onto the show. You first heard an interview with Marie Mitchell from the Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service and Director of Community Justice Programs, and she spoke about deaths in custody and truth-telling, particularly in the context of over-policing. And we talked a lot about youth justice as well and looked at Marie's personal story in the child protection system as a First Nations child and young adult. And then after that, and that was an extended interview, and then after that we spoke to Brett Collins from Justice Action. And Brett spoke about not only an update in regards to Justice Action, but he also spoke about computers in cells and the importance of external youth counselling without a conflict of interest. So, yeah, we spoke quite a lot about things. And certainly over the coming weeks, we will bring you more coverage about deaths in custody and other issues to do with prisons, human rights, and also women in prison as well. So it's goodbye from Marissa, and stay tuned every Monday 4 to 5 for the Do and Time show. We're going to be going out soon with our theme song, Black Fella, White Fella by the Rumpy Band. And be kind to each other. Bye.
As long as you a true fella, as long as you a real fella. All the people of different races with different lives in different places, it doesn't matter what your name is, we got to have lots of changes. We need more brothers if we're to make it. We need more sisters if we're to save it. Are you the one who's gonna stand up and be counted? Are you the one who's gonna be there when we're shouting? Are you the one who's always ready with a helping hand? Are you the one who understands this family plan? Black fella, white fella, yellow fella, any fella, it doesn't matter what you color, as long as you a true fella. All the people of different races with different lives in different places, it doesn't matter which religions, it's all the same when the ship is sinking. We need more brothers if we can make it. We need more sisters.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.